like you said, about my master's thesis work, which was on the association between water privatization and pediatric diarrhea in Bolivia. So, just for starters, what's water privatization? When I turn on my tap in New York City, I tend to get my water coming straight from a public company. But there's an idea that came mainly from economic theory saying that if you open up the markets for water service provision to privatization, you can increase efficiency and competition and introduce a profit motive that will make companies provide cleaner water to more people. Additionally, with respect to developing markets, we find in a lot of cities that the city networks don't reach out to everybody, and they're looking in a lot of places for ways to invest more capital to expand city water networks. And there was an idea that providing water from private companies would do that. One study that was published by the Inter-American Development Bank looking at privatization of water in Buenos Aires said that, during the course of time, that's exactly what you see. You see the proportion of households connected to water services increased by about 11% and about a 5% decline in childhood mortality. On the other hand, looking at what's happened in the developed world with water privatization, between the U.S., France, Canada, the U.K., and, England and Wales within the U.K., they didn't actually find that in any case, either private utilities provided better services more efficiently than public ones, or that turning public ones into private ones improved any kind of efficiency within the market. At the same time, with respect to diarrheal disease, the same number of outbreaks occurred in public and private water services, so there doesn't appear to be any benefit of private water provision in developed countries. Looking at what happens in developing countries, we've seen a lot of places starting in South Africa, where there's been association of major outbreaks and major problems with access. One of the biggest cholera outbreaks affecting hundreds of thousands of people in South Africa was associated with poor access to private water. Also, areas where people have been getting this private water, there have been massive protests about not getting it. In Bolivia, Ghana, Peru, several countries of the world, this has been a pretty consistent problem. And one study that was published just last year found that there actually was no even public health case. If you look at a multitude of studies and a meta-analysis of just what's happened in Latin America with respect to water privatization. So turning to Bolivia, which is where I did my work. It's this landlocked country here, this orange one right in the middle of South America, and where I did my work was in the city of Cochabamba right here in the middle of the country, the third largest city, and the city of El Alto, which began as a migrant settlement outside of La Paz and now has over a million people and is larger than La Paz itself. Where privatization ended up coming to Bolivia was the same way it came to a lot of countries. As you had the development of OPEC, there was a lot of capital being put into oil-producing countries that made its way to developed country banks and did what banks do. They loan it out. They would knock down the doors of leaders in developing countries and say, wouldn't it be wonderful if you had a dam providing hydroelectric power to your capital, or if you had a major road going between these two cities so you had improved trade? We'll lend that money to you at a low rate. But it was a floating rate, which is just like my med school loans, and I pay back at a rate that everyone else is paying back. But at the end of the 70s and the early 80s, when the oil shocks happened, a lot of that capital dried up and interest rates skyrocketed. So you found a lot of these countries in a position they couldn't pay back the interest, let alone the principal of these loans. Enter the IMF and World Bank. So acknowledging there's a need for developing country aid and for investment from foreign countries into developing countries, the IMF stepped in and said, we'll take over these loans and we'll provide seals of approval of these countries if they do what we like. And their advisors for a long time were looking at water privatization. And in Bolivia, that played out in a particular way. We ended up seeing two major privatizations, the city of Cochabamba, which had $614 million in new loans put into it with the caveat that the city would privatize. And then within a few months, the company of Bechtel from California took over the water network, didn't end up investing anything else, but increased rates significantly. In El Alto and La Paz, it was sold to a French company called Suez, which did put some new money in, but the way that they designed the water networks was to build the network down your main street, and then you look at a map and say that every street has water access, but it would charge the homes the cost of building the network to the homes in order to have access. So even though you had water down every street, for the most part, you weren't getting the newer areas of town, and over 200,000 people after 8 years had no access to water services, and 400,000 had no access to sanitation services. So why not do this in Bolivia? This is a mural that I found on the streets of El Alto, and I don't think it comes out very well there. But it's got a poster of Che, and it says, all of our action is a war cry against imperialism, and that's pretty indicative of Bolivian spirit. So tenure. That took about 8 years, from 97 through to 2005, when they had their water war, which ended the contract, followed by 2 years of litigation. Now it's back in public hands, but not during the time of my study. And in Cochabamba, this happened much faster. It took about 8 months, 8 to 10 months. And ever since then, a public company has been providing the water. So in summary, you've got a national debt creating pressure to privatize. Access fees mean lots of people don't have water even after years. Politicized society is going to protest, and this is a really major issue. Diarrheal disease caused about 75% of pediatric morbidity and mortality in Bolivia. So this is something that people actually care about. This leads to our hypothesis. If privatization of water and associated increased costs force people to use more contaminated water sources, it's likely that pediatric diarrheal disease prevalence increases as a result. We did a survey looking retrospectively at about 600 households, half in Cochabamba, which was public, and half in El Alto, which is private, including the oldest of children in a home that was between 3 and 6 years of age, giving us enough time to look back at their lives, and had a primary caregiver at least 15 years of age in the house. All the data was collected in the summer of 2006 by experienced bilingual female surveyors, either Spanish in Quechua in Cochabamba or Spanish in Aymara in El Alto. We talked about frequency and severity of disease, household water use, sanitation practices, and we measured episodes of diarrhea with respect to periods of sickness. So in terms of days, with at least periods of wellness in between them. We were also able to make use of a lot of historical events to determine our timeline. So if a mother didn't know exactly when a child was born, we could say, was your child born before or after the Cochabamba Water War? Okay, if it was before, they're over six, they're not in the study. If it was after, they're in the study. And we were able to do that with respect to a lot of aspects of the study, helping us define when episodes of illness occurred, and ages of children and things like that. And just a reminder, the contract was canceled over here, but it was still being provided when we did the study over here. We sampled based upon city growth patterns, water access, data from the 2001 census, and we talked to the health departments and water service providers in both cities, and we got a pretty good sampling in both El Alto over here and Cochabamba going across different representative populations. And we ended up talking mostly to women. About two-thirds in both cities were the mothers of the children, slightly more fathers in El Alto and slightly more grandmothers in Cochabamba, with a median age of about 30, and most of these surveys were done in Spanish. As far as the children themselves, pretty good mix of gender, both within each city and between cities. And the age, which is a major confounder in pediatric disease, obviously, is not going to be something that confounds our data, fortunately, because even though we didn't mean to, we matched ages between 3-year-olds, 4-year-olds, 5-year-olds, and 6-year-olds, totally by accident, between the cities pretty well. The other thing that I just wanted to point out is demographically, to get a sense of socioeconomic status, there was a difference in terms of El Alto versus Cochabamba because there were more paved and cobblestone roads in Cochabamba and more dirt and brick roads in El Alto. And why does that matter? If you look at this photo here, you can see what a paved house looks like in Cochabamba. Paved road outside, same city, dirt road. And obviously cobblestone, brick, and gravel fall somewhere in between. So the idea is the closer you are to this direction, the more likely you are to have your house be there for a while, to have more money and better access to city services. And that was one of the ways that we measured socioeconomics. Just to remind you of the main water sources, the vast majority of people were getting water from a tap in both cities. And if you were getting it from a tap in Cochabamba, it was coming from a public company. If you were getting it from a tap in El Alto, it was a private one. Other people were using wells, neighborhood networks that they built themselves, cistern trucks, or purchasing it from a store. The big differences we saw between cities are that you had more people using indoor faucets in El Alto as opposed to outdoor faucets in Cochabamba. Part of that has to do with the history of how the cities built their networks, with more cistern truck use, which are off-network water, and more than multiple sources in Cochabamba. We also saw that most people ended up treating their water at home, boiling in both cities, but boiling for longer periods in El Alto, which is important because it's at 14,000 feet. So if you don't boil it for a long enough time, your water might not get hot enough to kill the pathogens. Additionally, most homes had access to sewers, and those that didn't had more people throwing their water into the street or into the patio in El Alto than in Cochabamba. So what are we asking here? We got one child in El Alto and one child in Cochabamba. Which one's going to get sick more often? Do rates of disease differ between the cities? What about type of water source? Use of privatized water? And are these effects going to vary by demographic or sanitation factors? In both cities, we ended up seeing very high rates of pediatric diarrhea, with about two-thirds of children in each city getting sick over the last couple of years. But more children were getting sick more often in Cochabamba than in El Alto. The effects that we saw with prevalence is that living in El Alto, contrary to what we were thinking, was protective against getting diarrheal disease. But having privatized water or getting water from either either an off-network source like a cistern truck or having an outdoor faucet compared to indoor faucet were all associated with higher prevalence. These same trends played out with frequency of disease. So if the kid's getting sick, they're more likely to get sicker more often if they're using outdoor faucets, off-network water, or private water. And again, L. Alto was protected compared to Coach Bob. With respect to age and sex, we saw that males were getting sick a little bit more often, and we would expect younger children to have a higher disease prevalence than older ones. That didn't play out with the perfect trend compared to 6-year-olds, 3-year-olds, and 4-year-olds having higher rates, 5-year-olds not. I'll explain that more in a second. And we did see that people on dirt roads and cobblestone roads had higher prevalence of disease compared to people on paved roads. Same trends, like I was saying, with respect to frequency. Males are getting sick more often, but this is not what you would expect to see with age, protective effects versus 6-year-olds being younger. The reason being that we had a few outliers. Some 6-year-olds had got sick like 16 times. There were a couple 5-year-olds who got sick 15 or 14 times. And removing them, we see the trend we would expect, but we kept them into the study for the sake of it. Additionally, I just want to point out that those who had no water treatment or those who used other water treatments aside from boiling for a full 20 minutes had higher prevalence rates. Those who recently gained sewer access also had higher prevalence rates compared to those who had always had it. And those putting their wastewater into either, throwing it into the street or putting it into a septic tank instead of the sewer had higher prevalence. Same trends all played out in terms of frequency. Final question was looking at how those effects might have changed based upon the model that we used. We said, like I said, that living in El Alto was protective against getting diarrheal disease. Adding in water source, we see the same direction of effect, though the magnitude is a little bit stronger. But adding in demographic factors and sanitation factors, you see that these effects aren't changing. So these are really dependent upon water use. We looked at several other factors, but we didn't include them in the model just because they didn't change the way that water was affecting diarrheal disease prevalence, even if they had their own effects. So same questions again. What we ended up seeing was that living in Cochabamba was associated with higher prevalence and frequency, which isn't what we were thinking, because it's the public water city. But if you look independently of that at how people use water within the towns, regardless of which city they're in, private water and using off-network water was associated with both higher prevalence and frequency of disease, and using water from an outdoor faucet as opposed to an indoor faucet was also associated with higher prevalence of disease, and that has to do more with the way that the city structures were built. Finally, just looking at how those same effects occurred with respect to water disposal. Using a septic tank or throwing your water into street or patio instead of putting it into a sewer, higher rates of disease, fitting with our hypothesis. Having gained sewer access later also had higher rates of disease. For some reason, never having had access was associated with lower rates, and we're not exactly sure why. Finally, I'd just like to acknowledge some of the people who made this possible. People at Mount Sinai, the Golden Family Community Pediatrics Award Program, Mount Sinai Alumni Fellowship, Mount Sinai Global Health Center, Department of Community and Preventive Medicine, and the Center for Multicultural and Community Affairs. I would say thank you and ask for any questions, but I think we're holding those to the end. So thanks for your attention.